Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
All right, welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. And if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, tell us where you live and what you do for a living.
Hi, Dan. I am Snehi Chaplot. Thank you for having me on the podcast. I am based out of Houston, Texas. I am a food safety scientist by training. And I don't know how long I've been in the industry. I think a little over 17 years now. I started my career with the big guys like Tyson Foods and Kraft Heinz. Well, at that time, it was Kraft Foods. Now it's Kraft Heinz and Nestle in different roles, in somewhere in operations, somewhere in R&D, different food categories. Sometimes they were very strongly related to manufacturing operations, fixing things, you know, and then sometimes they were starting technologies or improvising technologies. So dependent, you know, very depending on the kind of projects I was on. And then I want to say approximately 8 years ago, 10 years ago, I had progressed into, moving into working with startups as the food safety head or food safety lead or something like that, you know, developing departments from scratch or building departments from scratch or putting down production units from scratch, all of that kind of fun stuff. And then I decided to start my own, consulting, auditing, and then slowly my own food manufacturing. In a nutshell, awesome. Pretty much where I am.
So in terms of actually that you were working with startups, you had all this experience to actually go and execute and start a company. Obviously, it's, you know, very different. So what was that process like to actually get started and leave your, you know, job where you were comfortable to building out your own business?
See, you know, while startups are a lot of fun and they sound great on paper, right. But, you know, there's a lot of discipline that goes in to having a very successful startup and any entrepreneur, you ask them something that is going to be very key to each. Let me put it this way. Success is very relative, but to a successful entrepreneur in whatever realm they consider themselves successful, discipline is key. And for me, because my grounding came from, working with the corporates, I had to get discipline into understanding how food production works or what is the importance of doing running food production a certain way. Where do processes actually hinder and where do processes are or where are processes a must to make sure that the food that we serve to you fine folks is actually safe and it is not causing any foodborne illnesses or it is not causing any quality issues or it is being given out in the most consistent, food safe and highest quality manner to the consumer. So that comes with a strong discipline. So when you ask me today, that's Snehi, how did that help you? Well, this is because my background or my foundation was in understanding what makes a good product tick in the market where it was in R&D. When I was with Nestle, I started working from benchtop all the way up to commercialization, understanding how to ask the difficult questions from doing focus groups or sensory analysis. Or believe it or not, for a product that is one of the biggest successes for Stouffer's, the mac and cheese. At one point, I did end up testing, I think, 40 or 50 samples of mac and cheese in 2 hours. And they were all different, but we had to do those kind of testings too. So understanding why we do those kind of things. And of course, you know, then taking all that discipline and then merging it with the funness and the creativity and the innovation of a startup, blending them together is, I think, in my idea, what makes a successful product and a startup.
Makes sense. So can you just talk more about like what products you're selling today? And I guess what makes you different or better than your competitors?
So my background, if it was not very evident, I am an Indian. South Asian. So, you know, I come from the land of Ayurveda sciences and, you know, ancient sciences where food was always used as a medicine and food, if not eaten the right way, could also be very harmful. So knowingly, unknowingly, I grew up in an environment which, you know, gave me that kind of upbringing. Now, I have used those same principles and those same learnings when I was growing up and tried to infuse them in the products that I put out in the market today with the help of my team. So the product that is in retail today, for which we are even fundraising today, is Gallivant Mava Ice Cream. And these are available in HEBs in the Dallas region and in Phoenicia. And very soon it will be in another few retailers. I won't name them till they actually happen. I am a very, very, how do I say, I don't want to jinx myself.
Superstitious.
And also in the California. Yes, I am. I am a South Asian. There has to be a little bit of superstition coming with me. And in the California region, we have with Bristol Farms and around 40, 45 independents, including some in Hawaii and Arizona. So what makes the product different is these are Indian style Mava ice creams. They are based on Ayurvedic principles of dairy processing. In very layman simple terms, it makes sure that milk is processed in such a way that it is actually healing and not like harmful anymore. So, and there it's something very simple where if you just boil the milk up to a certain level and, you know, cook it for a period of time, you will elevate its harmful properties. Sorry, you will reduce its harmful properties and elevate its healing properties, because at that point, as per Ayurveda, all the lactose in the milk gets converted, most of it, into insoluble sugars. So, you know, all those people who have lactose intolerance issues are no longer having those. And then all the good fats, which is ghee, which everyone knows are anti-inflammatory in nature, they all come up into the milk because milk is a colloid. So, you know, it comes all the way on the top. And now it's available to the body, bioavailable to go heal everywhere, repair all the harmful or the hurt parts of your body. And lastly, because at that temperature, when you're cooking milk, the protein gets denatured. So anyone who is having, like, you know, drinks milk and finds their tummy uneasiness because of whey being too heavy or casein being too heavy, well, it has gotten denatured to a certain point. So it becomes easy for digestion.
Makes sense. So you mentioned obviously being in retailers, but have you explored like other channels, you know, B2B, direct to consumer? Like, what is your strategy going forward?
So we have done, we launched around COVID. Brilliant idea, right? We didn't know COVID was coming. But so at that time, you know, e-commerce was one of the main channels that we could have tested to see whether our product was a viable product for the market. And while the data showed very strongly that the product is viable for the market, the e-commerce solution for frozen goods, especially frozen desserts, ice cream, where temperature variation is so critical, is not something that is a viable option. So for a small startup like us, which we are bootstrapped, we are not really we have not raised funds to be where we are today. So for someone like us, you know, it was not a very it was a very cumbersome option and a very expensive option to go for. We did test it out for a good 1 year and a half, and we decided to no longer do e-commerce. So we shut down e-commerce for that reason. But that data gave us the confidence to actually go pitch into definitely retail. And thereby, we got our accounts in 2022. We got Aldi, Central Market, HEB, Bristol Farms, Phoenicia, like name it. With NASA, we are with Chevron campus. We are with JPMC. We are with Oracle, Austin. You know, that gave us opened up a lot of doors for us, because it gave us enough data to know where to go pitch also. So those are the two channels we've stuck to for that reason. One is food service And one is obviously retail, where we are pitching directly to the buyers. And sometimes they want us to go through distributors, or sometimes they are open to us doing DSD, or sometimes they just are open to us supplying directly to their warehouses. So one of the other.
Makes sense. So in terms of being in retail, like how do you get the word out of, you know, about your products? Obviously, people can, you know, see it on the shelves, but it's a different thing when they're actually going and buying them. So how do you inform, you know, your potential customers? Because also like what you're selling is so unique. It's so new, right? So how do you like go about informing people about, you know, on what you're selling?
You know, it's a very interesting question you bring this up. And I'm really glad you did bring it up. Because in a way, and I mean this for any product that is a category creator, because in some ways we are a category creator, because we are a new style of ice creams. We are not existing in the market before we brought this in. While we have an ethnic background, our product doesn't necessarily always relate to only South Asian population. It actually, any ice cream lover is a fan of our product. And that is our strength. You know, you can never rely on a product being only for one audience or one ethnicity. So the best way is, in my opinion, for category creators is to put the product in as many people's mouth as possible. So while I would love, if I had a huge marketing fund, yes, I would all go gung-ho and, you know, like put in tons of money and, you know, handing out free coupons to people and persuading them and, you know, but realistically, I don't have those kind of funds. So what we have done is we have allocated and hired a team of brand ambassadors that are our voice at each of the stores that we go at, we sell at. And they, on a weekly basis, stand there and, you know, hand out samples to and put them in people's mouth. I think we've been doing this for almost like a year and a half. And our success story is with HEB, where our sales velocities are better, if not at par with Haagen-Dazs and Ben, by just putting it in people's mouth for 8 hours.
So what would you say is the biggest challenge that you're facing now in the business?
And of course, we also do a lot of events and trade shows, but, you know, that's more B2B. But yeah, sorry, you were asking something, Dan?
No, yeah, I was just curious. Like you mentioned, obviously, you know, doing these trade shows and being in the stores, but like, what is the biggest challenge that you're facing now in the business?
I think today, if you ask me what is the biggest challenge of my business, it's because I don't know. I don't want to say what the reason is, because I'm really not sure what the reason is. But we are a pre-seed. We are at a pre-seed point with our fundraising. And, you know, we are at that cusp where with CPG, it's the most difficult stage to raise funds at. And, you know, being a category creator as well as a disruptor in many ways, because we're forcing people to, you know, have clean products on the market and at the same price point as that of a Haagen-Dazs or a Ben & Jerry's, it's hard, it's not easy. But my background in food production, manufacturing, procurement has really aided me in getting to that price point. It's, I think, fundraising for me and, you know, raising funds with the right people and at the right time and pitching nonstop, I think that is the biggest challenge for folks like ourselves. Because, you know, I have a fabulous team, but right, at the same time, there are some things that only I can do. And I think while my investments manager is one of the finest on this earth, I still have to work with her and, you know, go pitch like there is no to end. Because this is, CPG is one of those categories that is the most difficult to get fundraising in.
That makes sense. Yeah. So in terms of raising money, like how much would you be looking to raise and what would you use the money for? Would it be like for marketing, for product? Like what, you know, what is your goal with that?
Sure. We are looking to raise approximately a million.
Okay.
And the funds are mostly used for three purposes. One is to fund the cash flow that we'll be primarily using to, you know, fulfill the upcoming POs that we are going to get from those retailers that I do not want to mention right now because I'm superstitious. and to procure ingredients for them, because we get price breaks only when we procure in bulk. That is the biggest struggle with CPG, you know, hitting those minimums or to get those price breaks, you have to buy in a pretty decent quantity. And then, of course, moving, we have progressed from semi-continuous production to a fully continuous production here in Texas itself. So what that does for us is while our production costs come down significantly, but that means our MOQs increase significantly per SKU. So now, you know, we will have a decent amount of inventory. So we have to, you know, manage that. So a big chunk of the $1 million that we raise will go towards that cash flow. And I would say 25% of it would go towards marketing efforts, because now that we are growing and, you know, getting into more retailers, we want to continue building the brand ambassadorship, which has been our biggest success. Yes, you know, word of mouth is great. Handing out coupons is brilliant. But our success, we've seen the maximum success when we put the product in people's mouth. So yes, that would be the second maximum spend. And the third one would be to hire people, maybe, you know, to manage these brand ambassadors, and maybe we don't have a dedicated marketing person on our team today. I have extremely experienced people who have filled the shoes to date, and they are filling it up. But I would like to get someone on board so that my team gets the right help. So I would say those three would be my biggest, the three places I would spend the money on.
For sure. So, I mean, obviously 2024 is around the corner. So in terms of revenue goals for 2024, it's like, what does that look like for you? And I guess like also approximately like, you know, what is your average monthly revenue now? And what are you looking to scale to for next year?
So our average monthly revenue right now is approximately 10 to, you know, 15K, depending on the month. And we are looking in 2024 for it to go approximately 2-3 times that, or if not more. I'm being a little conservative because I'm a little conservative. I would rather over deliver than, you know, shoot for something that probably a far stretch. But yes, we are looking at 3-time growth at a minimum, just because of the potential POs. Well, I say potential just because they're not in my inbox, but the POs coming into my account. And if any more accounts come on board, then it'll definitely surpass that.
What would you say is like the biggest obstacle preventing you from, you know, 3xing your revenue for next year? Is it getting more of these POs or like finalizing these POs? Like, what would you say that is for you?
Where do I begin? No, I'm kidding. I would say the biggest obstacle today is having the funds, because we would need the funds, the cash flow for cash flow management as well as marketing. I would say what we currently have is good where we are, but in order for us to, you know, support those growth curves that are coming, we would definitely need more marketing funds and someone dedicated to manage those marketing strategies and campaigns for sure.
So what would you say is like the role of high level technology and AI in your business? Like, do you use it like at all for marketing, or, you know, does AI play any role like in your business?
Yeah. I mean, this is me talking very naively because I am a user and I do not understand the technicality behind AI and all of that. I am just a user. I would say it would be in every business's, I guess, favor to understand how AI can apply in different realms. I use AI to make my life easy not almost every day, but maybe almost every 2 hours. I have used AI to make my Excel sheets run more better, remove more errors. I have used AI to sometimes, you know, summarize my contracts because I'm getting tired and I can't, you know, read the full thing and it's tiring me out. So I have used it to summarize it to get a gist and then of course go back into it and make sure it's good. But I also think that it's a tool. It cannot be like, you can't like 100% rely, okay, AI told me this, so this is it. No, use it, but use it like a tool and do your cross-referencing very strongly. This is me talking as an end user. Now, where all could it be used? Oh my God. I mean, the sky is the limit. I don't even know how much data analysis can be done by AI by using the right combinations and the right algorithms with AI. I think I would probably hire my next hire on my next raise would be someone to bring on to look at, to take on AI and how it can be integrated into my systems very strongly. I think that would be after my first raise. I think the next raise when I do, I would definitely want to do that because it's better to build in AI at the foundational level while we are still available to, you know, mess around with it and see how it goes and utilize it. I think AI is, at least in CPG, I have not seen very strong case scenarios of how it has led to something concrete, but it's just around the corner. There will be case studies coming out very soon. Right. You know, it's just about time. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I view it like, at least like for your business, like as something where it can provide, you know, information. If people are asking questions, because you said like, this is like a new category. So I'm sure you have many people asking you different types of questions about the product. So it can answer those questions in a good manner with AI.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you just like the bots, right? Like you teach your, you teach Bing how to answer whenever people ask what are, you know, Gallivant ice cream or what are Mava ice creams, you know, just talk about that. Or you can even talk about how on your website, you can see what people are scrolling and, you know, them towards something, or I don't know, like maybe have a chat bot over there that is, you know, forcing people to have a conversation with them or answering their queries or predicting what their queries could be and giving us that feedback that this is what people are looking for. You know, like there are these channels where people say, what are the top 20 questions asked in your category and all of that, and then build your content around that. So I think what AI will do is that build those top 20 question categories way faster and then, you know, help us build content way faster to answer people's questions. I think that would be a fabulous solution to those category creator products like ourselves.
For sure. So what would you say is the one biggest piece of advice that you wish you knew before you started this company?
Be very sure that you have nothing else to do. No, I'm kidding. I shouldn't say such things. Oh my God. Okay. I would say be extremely passionate, but don't be foolish in your passion. And what I mean by that is, you know, every entrepreneur, when we create a product or we create anything, a technology, whatever, we're very passionate about it. But sometimes in that passion, we forget the fine line of being smart and taking the criticism or the constructive feedback that we get or the constructive feedback that we give. We look at it negatively, but we get very defensive about it. I think what we should be doing is be very objective about it. So don't be foolish about what you've created. You know, take that early on, like that foundational data that you get. Don't be hesitant and scared in asking those difficult questions, because if you get your foundational questions correct and you get those difficult questions answered as brutally, honestly as possible at that point, you will have a higher success rate in your upcoming year. I did that with my product. Although I come from such a strong background of food production and manufacturing and R&D, I tested these ice creams with 3,000 people. No age bar, no ethnicity bar, no gender bar, like anything. And everyone who was willing to give me a feedback, I did it. And that really made a big difference, because when I launched the product in market, in retail, I had data to show that this is a validated product, but the sales further validated that data. So, you know, it's the success rate is higher when you are ready to listen at the foundational level. So I would say be passionate, but don't be foolish.
That's awesome. So if somebody watching this wanted to reach out to you, do you mind sharing your company website or social media handle, just best way to get in contact with you?
Oh, absolutely. Our website is www.gallivanticecreams.com, and you can find us on Instagram at Gallivant Ice Creams or Facebook at Gallivant Ice Creams. We are there available to you guys. Please find us near a store near you in Texas and in California. And if we are not around you, then go tell your grocery stores about us and tell them that you want them to carry us, and we will be there.
Awesome, Snehi. Thank you so much for your time today, and we're rooting for you.
Thank you so much, Dan, for this, and I appreciate the time and the opportunity. Thank you for letting me say my story.
Of course. All right. Bye.